Huey had had several drinks by now, but not enough to make him overlook the risk of falling over the edge, splurging the wages old man Jenkins paid him and the bet he won from Snort, most of which he was sending to Walter and Eve. Huey sidled up next to Snort at the bar.
Huey, I watched old man Jenkins walk in here, sit down to a drink his hands done bought him, and walk out. Don't he ever buy any himself?
How do you think he got rich?
Now Snort had his arm around Peeler's shoulder.
Where in the hell did a car jockey ever learn that kind of riding?
Almost everybody in the room had bought Peeler a drink.
I was raised in Callahan County, helped my old daddy break horses and mules. Rode a while with Booger Red Privet's Bronx Show, till I got tired of them outlaws busting my back. Figured herding an automobile ought to be easier than stomping Bronx.
Pays better, too.
Huey had never been apt at figures, but he knew the difference between $30 a month and $50. Huey didn't know where the girls came from, but three appeared, dancing with the cowboys.
Come on, cowboy, see if you can tame me.
Huh? Whoa!
One of them took Huey in her arms and did a reel with him. Huey's head was spinning by the time they finished. He collapsed into a chair, leaned back too far, and fell heavily. He struggled to free himself from the overturned chair, but hung a spur on one of its braces and floundered like a turtle on its back. He saw someone hovering over him.
Need a little help, Uncle Huey?
Huey blinked, trying to bring the face into focus as it swayed back and forth like a pendulum. It was somehow familiar, yet he couldn't see clearly enough to identify the features.
It's me, Uncle Huey. Tommy.
Tommy?
The voice was his nephew's, though it sounded deeper and more mature than he remembered.
Don't you know saloon ain't no place for a self-respecting cowboy?
He didn't expect the strength his nephew showed as Tommy took his hand and helped him to his feet. Huey kicked his spur loose from the chair, which fell back, almost tripping Skip Harkness and the young woman he was dancing with. They didn't seem to notice. Huey leaned against the table for balance.
Your mom would be awful disappointed to find a boy like you in a place like this.
She'd be disappointed in both of us. Now, I ain't a boy anymore. You just ain't seen me in a long time.
Tommy still seemed to sway from side to side.
Oh, hold still so I can get a good look at you.
Tommy righted the chair and held it steady. Huey seated himself, careful not to knock the chair over again. Funny, he thought, how much a kid could change when you weren't watching. Tommy appeared broader in the shoulder and a foot taller than Huey remembered. He looked much like his older brother, Cotton. Huey could see a lot of his father in Tommy's features and some of his mother in the eyes.
You're not a man yet. Not quite. Why ain't you at home in school?
I finished all the schooling there was 2 years ago. Decided to come looking for you.
How'd you find me?
Just asked around. Anywhere you've been, they remember Huey Calloway.
You ought to be helping your daddy right now. Planting time, ain't it?
Me and daddy ain't jihad too good lately. I want to learn to be a cowboy like you.
Well, you're too late. They ain't making no more cowboys like me, hardly. Times have gone off and left us.
You always said I was a natural hand. I've been breaking horses and mules for Alvin Laudermilk last couple years when Daddy could spare me.
Then why don't you stay home and work for Alvin?
I've learned all there is to learn around Upton City. I want to see different country, different people.
Well, people are pretty much the same wherever you find them. Most of them good and a few not worth hanging with an old rope.
I thought maybe you could get me a job where you're working.
Old man Jenkins runs a pretty tough outfit.
I can make him a hand if he's got any openings.
Huey knew that a couple of the J-Bar boys rode the caboose when the train pulled out, committed to seeing after the steers when they reached the Flint Hills. They'd not be back until fall, and maybe not then if they stumbled onto some good-looking Kansas girls bent on getting married. Huey had known it to happen.
Well, we'll talk about it in the morning. Maybe you'll see things a little plainer in the light of day.
I'll bet you will.
The bartender came over, eyeing Tommy with suspicion. The man had been nervous all evening because many of the hands from both ranches looked underage.
Huey, this boy don't look like he's shaving regular yet. They got a town ordinance.
Yeah, we was fixing to leave.
Huey pointed his chin toward Snort Yarnell.
You all, let too much riffraff in here anyway.
Snort took that as a compliment and saluted Huey with a whiskey toast.
Here's to the boys that labor and sweat, and 30 a month is all they get.
The Jenkins driver had a death grip on the edge of the bar, his eyes wide and glassy. Huey hoped the old man didn't need to go anywhere tomorrow. Huey found his own bed. Knowing he was likely to be somewhat impaired on his return, he rolled it out before he left camp for the night's entertainment. Tommy spread his blankets. Huey noted he had no tarp to repel rain. It didn't rain often in these mountains, but on those rare occasions, the downpours could be heavy. If Tommy stayed, Huey would have to see about getting him a tarp to cover his bedroll. Tommy was likely to come up short in other ways, too. Breaking horses and mules for Alvin Laudermilk at home was a far cry from working on a big outfit like the J-Bar in the Davis Mountains. Without even trying, he could think of 20 easy ways a green kid could get himself skinned and bloodied. Huey would have to watch over him like a mother hen. Best thing was to try to talk him into going home. That would take the responsibility from Huey's shoulders, and he avoided responsibility like he avoided measles and chicken pox. He drifted off to sleep, rehearsing the speech he'd lay on Tommy to hasten his return to the farm. Next morning, he couldn't remember a word of it. Huey was not ready to quit his blankets when Bias clanged his pothook against an iron rod.
Breakfast! Andale! Andale!
He had been half asleep, half awake, his nose assaulted by sharp smoke from the cook's fire, and his ears by Bias's reckless banging of lids against pots and Dutch ovens. Huey didn't know why his head hurt so badly and his stomach was so sour. He remembered eating a couple of boiled eggs from a bowl on top of the bar last night. One of them must have been bad. He had not bothered to remove his clothes before going to bed. He put on his hat and then his boots with their pair of sporty gal-leg spurs that had a shank shaped like a woman's leg, complete with garter and high-heeled shoe.
Well, looky here, boys. This is what they call a working outfit at the J-Bar.
Snorty Arnell and the other Slash R cowboys were coming into camp. As a neighborly gesture, Bige Saunders had invited them to share breakfast because they brought no chuck wagon to town. Huey hurried to his feet, not wanting Snort to catch him in his blankets this late in the morning. The sun was almost ready to come up. Snort was always looking for something to hoorah a man about. The better he liked someone, the louder the hoorahing.
Hey, Huey, you up?
Yeah, I've been up for an hour. Already have my coffee.
Snort seemed in much too good a humor for the night to have been so short. He could drain a barrel of whiskey and still wake up at daylight ready to go. Huey wondered sometimes if Snort was all human. Snort recognized Tommy.
Heard you say you're looking for a cow-punching job. If old Bige don't hire you, come over to the Slash R. I'll take you under my wing and show you things you never heard of.
Yes, Mom would be tickled to hear that.
Cold sober now, Huey felt the weight of responsibility even heavier than last night as he introduced Tommy to Bige Saunders. Because Bige was foreman, it was his place to hire and fire, though old man Jenkins was likely to whisper in his ear on occasion. Bige was a man of 50 years and a solid 175 pounds, his shoulders broader than Huey's, broad enough to carry the weight of a boss's responsibilities.
So, you're Huey's nephew.
Saunders contemplated Tommy in the first light of dawn.
Can't say you favor him, though I'd mark that as an asset. Had any experience working stock?
We raised a few cattle and crops.
Tommy did not mention the sheep. Huey hoped Bige would decide Tommy was too young and inexperienced. There was a lot of difference between growing up on a stock farm and being an honest-to-God cowboy.
Up against a big outfit like the J-Bar, that little old place of my brother's ain't big enough to make a decent horse trap.
I broke horses and mules for Alvin Laudermilk whenever I could.
I knew Alvin way back yonder. He still favored the whiskey like he used to?
Not anymore. He's taking the pledge.
That didn't sound like Alvin, Huey thought. He'd probably just said so to satisfy the preacher, Brother Averill. Budge favored a little toddy himself once in a while, but Huey had never seen him take one when there was a job to see after. Old man Jenkins couldn't have found a more responsible foreman and wagon boss if he'd hunted all over hell and half of Texas. Huey thought it ought to be clear to Budge that Tommy was not ready for a job like this. But the favorable gleam in Budge's eyes indicated that Huey was going to be saddled with the worry of looking after Tommy whether he liked it or not.
Going wage around here for a green hand is 25 a month, Chuck, and all the ground you need to roll out your bedding.
Tommy had never earned $25 a month. Alvin Laudermilk would likely have paid him 30 or 35 had he been able to work full time. But Tommy's responsibilities on the family stock farm prevented that. His father probably needed him at home a lot more than Budge or old man Jenkins needed him here. Still, Huey could understand the boy's need for independence. He'd been a lot younger than Tommy when he set out on his own. Budge shook Tommy's hand.
Well, son, with your Uncle Huey's help, I expect you'll be making us a top hand in no time. Two men went to Kansas with the cattle, so I'll pick you a string of horses out of theirs.
Tommy pumped Budge's hand and grinned with delight. Huey's stomach went a little more sour. Damn those boiled eggs. Before they left town, Huey insisted that Tommy write his parents a letter and let them know where he was. He watched Tommy to be sure the job was done and the letter posted.
Anytime you feeling homesick, just let me know.
Tommy didn't take the hint. His blue eyes shone with pleasure.
I think I'm really gonna like it here.
Huey could see he would have the boy on his hands for a while if Walter and Eve didn't come to take him home. Snort and the Slash R Cowboys had drifted away, back to the ranch they worked for. Huey half expected Snort to draw his time and set off for someplace new. He'd already stayed with the Slash R longer than anywhere Huey could remember. Perhaps Snort was getting old and looking for a place to light. For that matter, Huey's tenure at the J-Bar had stretched well beyond his usual limit. But in his case, he wasn't getting old. He was just getting easier to suit. Tommy watched Bias lift up and latch the chuck box lid, preparing the wagon to move.
Where do you reckon we're going?
Back to the ranch. We've got cows to brand and a new bunch of broncs to break.
Broncs? That sounds like fun.
Huey glanced toward Skip Harkness. That was what Skip would say, too.
I'll have to watch this boy pretty close.
Huey was still riding Biscuit, so Mr. Jenkins wouldn't worry about him forking broncs. The first gate they reached, he'd turn Biscuit into the remuda and catch one of the broncs he'd been breaking. Before the outfit was 2 miles from Alpine and the remuda strung out toward Broken Country, Tommy and Skip Harkness had struck up a friendship. They rode side by side. Huey was too far back to hear more than fragments of their conversation, but he could see that they laughed a lot and gestured with their hands, exchanging shady jokes they probably thought were new. Huey had heard them years ago. He understood why the two would hit it off. They were within a year or so of the same age, and they had in common that both had been brought up to be farmers and had left home to taste the cowboy life. Huey wished Tommy would pair up with someone who exhibited more judgment, like him, for instance. Hanging around with Skip, Tommy might be exposed to all kinds of foolish notions. It wasn't Huey's business to tell Tommy who his friends ought to be, though he might give the boy a subtle hint, like telling him that Skip had the brains God gave a ground squirrel. He thought of his own long friendship with Snort Yarnell. Snort never appeared to worry about consequences. He simply did what he wanted, when he wanted, and to whomever he wanted. He dragged Huey into many a ticklish jackpot, but so far, none fatal. Most seemed funny later, looked back on from the safe vantage point of time. Funny and totally foolish. Loose horses tended to move faster than the wagons, so Huey had to ride out in front and slow them down after a while to prevent them from overtaking Bias. The driver of the hoodlum wagon laid back the first wire gate they came to because Bias's crippled leg made it inconvenient for him to climb up and down. The gate was left open for the horses to follow. Huey signaled for Tommy to close it after the remuda passed. No one bothered to put up signposts along the way, for the wagon road to the J-Bar was not a public thoroughfare. Anyone who didn't know his way had no business following it anyhow. Bias needed no signposts, or even a road. There was probably not a wagon rut or cow trail in these mountains the old vaquero hadn't traveled at some time or other, and few ranches on which he hadn't worked. Folks claimed he'd helped the army track holdout Apaches 30 or 40 years ago, though he never made claims or even answered questions about those times beyond a nod or a negative shaking of his gray head. Perhaps he was ashamed of something there, for both sides did terrible things to one another. Or perhaps it was simply so far in the past that it no longer held interest for him. Huey surveyed the penful of New Bronx. He had a keen eye for horses. Horses were much like men in that most found a level at which they functioned comfortably. A few, like Biscuit, would prove outstanding, and a few never would be worth the price of the cartridge needed to put them out of everybody's misery. It was customary that the foreman assign a mount of Bronx as each hand's individual responsibility. Bige Saunders preferred that each man take turns, picking one at a time to avoid any appearance of favoritism. He didn't make the Mexican hands take second best after the Anglos. He treated everyone the same. Aparicio was roping out the Bronx one by one. Huey had his eye on a likely-looking sorrel. He pointed to it.
Catch me that one, por favor!
Saunders waved Aparicio off.
Huey, seems like you neglected to tell me that Mr. Jenkins said you wasn't to ride any more Bronx.
Huey tried to look innocent.
He said that? I must have forgot.
Forgetfulness overtakes us all when we get older. You've celebrated too many birthdays, Huey. You've got to quit riding these Bronx before one of them cleans your plow for once and for all.
I'm just now coming into my prime.
It occurred to Huey that he'd probably have to quit the J-Bar one day soon and find a job on some ranch where they didn't discriminate against a man simply because he had had more experience than most. But he couldn't leave just yet because Tommy would want to go with him, and he hadn't been on the payroll long enough to earn his first paycheck. Saunders looked at Tommy.
Which one do you want?
That sorrel.
Ooh, you got good judgment. Alvin Laudermilk must have taught you right smart.
I picked him because you did.
Then you do have good judgment.
Skip Harkness made his first choice on the basis of the wildest looking, the most likely to offer him a rousing fight. By that measure, he selected well. He picked a long-tailed bay whose conformation indicated a strain of Mustang and whose rolling eyes suggested war.
I believe he'll give me plenty of fun.
I believe he'll kill you.
Most of the Bronx bore rope burns across their noses, indicating they'd already fought through a session or two with the hackamore, being staked to a heavy log or wagon wheel until they learned the hard way that the rope was boss. The marks would heal, but the lesson would remain with all except a few unreachables. Supposedly, the Bronx had been saddled and ridden, or ridden at, a time or two by the outfit that raised them. But horse dealers could be notoriously cavalier with the facts. Huey contended that most missed their true calling in politics. Ideally, breaking Bronx was a task best done in winter when cowboys had more free time on their hands. But Jenkins believed the best training for a cow horse was working with cattle, and Huey couldn't argue the point. When the Bronx were well broken and had learned something about following a cow, Jenkins would resell them at a profit and bring in a new batch of raw ponies. A believer in the adage that idle hands are the devil's workshop, he had a strong commitment to protecting his employees' moral fiber.
Skip, if I was you, I'd work up to that base sort of gradual. I'd ride them other two first and get myself in shape.
I'd rather start with the roughest one while I'm fresh. After him, the others would be like pets.
Yeah, well, if I was you then, I'd take time to write a letter home. Might be the last one your poor old mother ever gets.
I think Uncle Huey's right, Skip. That pony looks like a bad one.
That's the way I like him.
With an easy swing, Aparicio dropped the loop over the bay's neck. The beast plunged against the rope, dragging Skip and Tommy halfway across the corral, their boot heels firmly dug into the dirt, raising dust like a dry fog behind them. When it reached the fence, it whirled and quartered back the other way. The impact when it hit the end of the line sent Skip sprawling on his face, but Tommy braced the rope around his hip and hung on. Bronc reared and pawed.
Watch it, Tommy! He'll stop you!
He started out to help, then decided to hold back. The boys had to learn. Skip pushed to his feet, picking up his fallen hat and dusting himself with it. A hint of fear insinuated itself into his eyes, or perhaps it was an awakening wisdom.
Oh, he may be a little tougher than I figured.
It'd do him a world of good to drag around a log for 2 or 3 days before you try to get on him.
If you say so, I guess he'll keep.
Skip's getting smarter all the time. Perhaps Tommy's a good influence on Skip instead of Skip being a bad influence on Tommy.
They had to put a loop around the bay's forefeet and throw him down to put a hackamore on him. Huey tried to leave it to the boys, but finally could hold back no longer and pitched in to help. He tied a length of heavy rope to the hackamore as a rein, dallied it to his saddle horn, and led the bronc out onto the flats, where several long logs lay scattered over a beaten-out stretch of ground covered only by a thin stand of short burrow grass. Tommy started to tie the rope to a log that had once been part of a cottonwood trunk.
It's Skip's horse. Let him tie the rope.
The log was heavy enough that the bay would have difficulty in dragging it, yet it would yield enough to minimize the risk of injury. The colt made a running start and was jerked up short at the end of the rope. It fell backward onto its rump, kicking, then scrambling to its feet. The log had moved 6 inches.
Tom, he's drugged that thing around for a few days. He'll be a heap better educated.
Tom, Skip's tried to ride that knothead a couple of times. He'll be a heap better educated, too.
I'll have him eaten out of my hand.
Or maybe just eating your hand.
Tommy's sorrel fought the rope, but he put up less fight than Skip's long-tailed bay. Tommy handled him with quiet ease. Huey warmed with pride. The hands rode their new broncs in the evenings after they finished the day's rounding up and branding. The fresh colts were left staked through the day while the cowboys rode out on their regular business. Though Tommy Sorrel and most of the others quickly adapted to their new situation, Skip's bay seemed no gentler after spending 2 days tied to the log, led away for only feed and water. When approached, it rolled its eyes and challenged the end of the rope. The impact jerked it around unceremoniously, but did not alter its behavior.
That horse is plumb mean, and maybe half idiot to boot.
Huey saw dread in Skip's eyes. Sooner or later, the boy had to either climb into the saddle or back down in front of everybody. He wouldn't back down. Huey doubted that any man in the crew would. Now, on his third evening, Skip could no longer put off the confrontation. He looked out across the flat where some of the young broncs were still tied. All had been ridden except his.
I reckon it's time he learns who's boss.
I don't know that he's ready to get religion yet.
I can handle him.
What Skip couldn't handle, Huey thought, was the feeling that the rest of the crew might consider him afraid.
Well, if you're bound and determined. Come on, Tommy, let's give him a hand.
Huey wrapped the end of the hackamore rein around his saddle horn and led the bronc into the corral. It resisted all the way, setting its legs, hopping, twisting, tugging back on the rope as Biscuit stubbornly dragged it forward. Huey secured the bronc to a snubbing post in the center of the pen and backed Biscuit away to avoid being kicked by the flailing hooves. Bige Saunders stood near the fence, frowning. Huey rode back to him.
Bige, I don't believe that boy can handle this one.
He seems to think so.
Skip carried his blanket toward the thrashing bronc. Tommy followed with the saddle.
Well, he's too game to quit on his own, but you could tell him to. You could say that pony needs to be staked out some more.
He's already had 3 days. I don't think 3 weeks would make much difference.
Well, then tell Skip you've decided to let somebody with more experience ride him first. Me, maybe, or Aparicio. That'd give the kid a respectable way out.
It'd shame him. Skip picked that pony. He'll have to ride him or try to.
The bay fought so frantically that Skip was unable to keep the blanket on long enough for Tommy to follow it with the saddle. Huey got a rope on 1 foot and tied it up so the bronc couldn't paw or kick without falling. After several tries, he and Skip and Tommy, all working together, got the saddle on and cinched down. The pony humped its back so much that it reminded Huey of a camel. Huey threw his right arm around the bronc's neck and grabbed both ears.
All right, get on him.
Huey would bite down on an ear if necessary, but he'd rather not get all that hair in his teeth. It always left a gritty taste that kept him spitting until he could wash it down with coffee. Skip swung into the saddle. The pony tried to jump, but went down on its rump. Tommy untied the rope that bound a foot.
All right. Turn him loose.
Huey relinquished his hold on the ears and jumped back. The bronc lashed a hind foot at him as it went by. The hoof just missed Huey's ear. Huey had not seen many range broncs pitch harder than this one. He thought it could hold its own against professional buckers in the 101 Ranch Wild West show. Skip's hat sailed off and was pounded into a shapeless lump beneath the hooves. Every jump lifted Skip a little higher from his seat. He gave up trying to make a show of it and gripped the saddle horn. Pride gave way to the instinct for survival. Though Skip was making a good fight, he was wearing down, while the bronc seemed only to gain strength and determination. Daylight between the kid and the saddle grew broader with every jump. One stirrup flopped free, then the other.
Get away, you crazy beast!
As Skip left the saddle, Huey rushed forward, waving his hat, trying to spook the horse out of kicking range. But the bay managed to strike the kid with one hind foot while Skip was still in the air. Free of the rider, it pitched on across the corral. The back of the kid's head hit the ground. Huey rushed to Skip's side, Tommy and Saunders and Aparicio close behind. The young cowboy lay limp and unresponsive. No one was laughing now.
He's knocked out cold.
He motioned for a couple of the young hands to lift Skip and carry him out of the corral so the still-excited bronc couldn't run over him. Huey and Aparicio trapped the horse in a corner, and Tommy grabbed the hackamore rein.
Boy, what you fixing to do?
Ride him. Worst thing we can do is let him get away with it. He needs to be rode, and right away.
If your mother could see us, she'd kill both of us.
Let me do it, son.
You take hold of his ears.
The boy gripped the horn with his right hand, the rein, and a handful of dark mane in his left. He swung into the saddle and pulled his hat down tight.
Ready?
The first long jump lifted him several inches from the saddle. He regained his balance and gripped firmly with his knees. Watching, Huey could almost feel the jarring impact of each landing. But Tommy rode the bronc until it quit pitching and began circling the corral in a run, its hide dripping sweat. At length, the pony quit running and stood still, trembling in confusion and fatigue. Tommy swung down quickly and stepped away so it couldn't kick him if it took a notion to. It was too weary to try. Huey felt weary, too, from witnessing his nephew's performance. Bige Saunders walked up to Tommy.
Just winded is all. Is Skip still out?
Good ride, but you look kind of gray around the gills. He's trying to rally, but he doesn't know whether he's in Cape Cod or Hickory Bend.
He made a game try. Let's don't tell him I finished his ride.
I don't imagine that bay will buck as hard the next time Skip tries. You took the starch out of him.
Took the starch out of me watching him. I told you, Bige, us Callaways know how to ride.
I hope you know how to quit and win.
As Bige walked away, Huey put his arm around Tommy's shoulder.
Youngin, I never taught you to ride like that.
I learned by riding broncs for Alvin Laudermilk. I wanted to be just like you, Uncle Huey.
Like me?
Huey thought of Eve and what she would say.
God help us all.
By midday, the branding was finished.
What are we likely to do next, Uncle Huey?
First thing you need to learn is that you don't ask questions. You watch the boss. If he saddles his best drive horse, you catch your best drive horse. If he saddles his best cutting horse, you're fixing to work the herd so you catch up one that's quickest and quietest around the cattle.
But Bige didn't saddle a horse at all. He left a while ago on the chuck wagon headed for town.
In a case like that, you just keep working on your broncs and wait for them to tell you what to do.
Bige returned with a big load of flour, coffee, and other camp necessities, which caused Huey to wonder some, but pride still wouldn't let him ask questions. With the branding finished, he saw no need to restock the chuck wagon. When Bige was ready, he would tell them what he wanted them to know. That happened in the bunkhouse dining room at supper.
Boys, Mr. Jenkins will be here after a while in his automobile. First thing in the morning, him and me are going down under the rim rock to the Circle W outfit he just bought. Huey, I'd appreciate it if you and the boys would bring the horses and follow the wagons. We'll be counting the Circle W cattle.
Budge was the kind of boss who issued orders as if he were asking a favor, not giving a command.
Well, we'll be tickled to do that. You reckon Bias knows the way?
Bias knows every cow trail from the Guadalupes to the Rio Grande. All you need to do is follow him. I'd be obliged if you keep an eye on everything, Huey.
There they were again, giving him a sort of straw boss responsibility he hadn't asked for. But how could he refuse a favor so politely requested?
Why, sure.
He had never been to the Circle W and had only a general notion of how far it was from J-Bar headquarters. It made no real difference whether the trip was short or long. Making it was simply part of the job he was being paid for, and trailing horses was always pleasurable. He relied on Bias to set the pace and the route. As they went along, the going became rougher, the trail steeper and rockier, so the chuck wagon and hoodlum wagon couldn't make good time. It was a challenge to keep the remuda from overtaking and passing them. Bias camped the first night beside a clear-running narrow creek where an old set of brush corrals would hold the horses. The grass was green, so Huey suggested that the hands loose-herd them and let them graze a while, though the traveling had been slow enough to allow considerable grazing through the day. He was glad for the stop. He wondered why he felt tired. The shipping, then the branding, had kept him going at a steady clip for weeks, but that never seemed to bother him much in the past. He speculated it was the responsibility of watching out for Tommy, seeing to it that he didn't let Skip Harkness lead him off into some kind of foolishness that might get him hurt or fired. In some ways, Skip reminded him of a young Snort Yarnell. Hard work never bothered Huey, but responsibility always felt like a smothering burden. While the horses grazed, he found a pair of markings on a boulder twice the size of Bias's wagon. One was a name and a date, and the words 10th Cav scratched into the rock like a tombstone without a grave. The other was a faded black painting of a strange oblong figure with a square head and stick arms, a spear in one hand. Tommy and Skip rode up to look at the markings with him. Tommy pointed to the painted one.
What you reckon that's supposed to represent, Uncle Huey?
Some kind of medicine man, maybe, or some kind of god. It used to be Apaches here, and before them, I expect there was others.
There's probably a store behind it, behind the other one, too. 10th Cavalry. Those buffalo soldiers, weren't they?
Yeah, I think so. That was before my time. There was all kinds of people passed through here in the years gone by. Indians, Mexicans, white men. All of them gone.
Many stories went untold in these mountains. Secrets hidden beyond the haze of uncountable years. Old victories now forgotten. Old crimes long buried. Sometimes Huey's skin prickled as he imagined he could hear ancient spirits whispering to him in languages he couldn't understand, trying to tell him something no one but God knew anymore. It was a grand country, on its face at least, but through those stories he had heard, he was aware that it had known darkness too. Some of the people who had passed this way had been victors, some of them victims. Some seeking peace, and some on their way to war. They left little trace of themselves beyond random markings on the stones. Men probably lay buried where he now rode, but he had no way of knowing. Whoever they had been, however long or short their stay, whatever triumphs and tragedies they had experienced here, the stones were silent, and the wind had long since taken their tracks away. One day, Huey would also be gone. And he'd not even carved his name on a mountainside so that someone in the future would know he had once been here. It was a disturbing thought, one he didn't allow to burden him for long. Tomorrow could take care of itself. This was today. Today had always been more important to Huey than either yesterday, which couldn't be changed, or tomorrow, which he could only guess at.
I'm gonna scratch my name on there, too.
You ought not do that. It'd be like marking up somebody's tombstone.
100 years from now, that may be the only trace left of me.
Tommy shook his head.
I'm figuring on still being around 100 years from now.
And me with you.
100 years from now, you'd be 150 years old. Maybe 175.
That is when I may decide to give up riding.
He was gratified when Skip rode away without adding his name to the inscriptions on the rock. After the remuda was safely penned, Huey staked Biscuit outside on grass at the end of a long rope so the brown could graze freely. He patted the horse's neck.
Biscuit, old friend, don't know why, but I'm one tuckered out hand.
Working alone much of his life, Huey picked up the habit of talking to his horse when he had no fellow humans to talk to.
I'd like to be around the day he answers you back. I bet you'd jump 2 feet high.
Huey felt a twinge of embarrassment, along with faint resentment. This had been a private conversation. He sensed that Skip was trying to impress Tommy with his wit, but he still couldn't resist showing off a little. Reformation came slowly to some.
At least he doesn't talk a lot of nonsense, like some cowpuncher kids I've known.
Too bad he can't talk. I'll bet he could tell some funny stories on you.
He'd have the good sense to keep his mouth shut. Some people could learn a lot from a horse.
Bias, calling everyone to supper, gave Huey a welcome excuse to end the conversation, which was not going anywhere. Walking ahead of the others, he heard Tommy talking quietly to Skip.
You oughtn't to tease Uncle Huey. He's just getting sort of old, is all.
Must think I'm losing my hearing, too.
The words stung a bit, but he supposed from Tommy's viewpoint he was a little long in the tooth. He was more than twice his nephew's age. Huey lifted his bedroll down from the hoodlum wagon so he could sit on it while he ate. Tommy joined him, his own bedroll too small to provide much of a seat. There wasn't room enough left for Skip on the bedroll, so he sat on the ground and leaned back against the end of the roll for support. The new adventure was good for Tommy's appetite. He had heaped his plate high with beef and beans and 2 tall sourdough biscuits.
I don't know when I ever tasted better.
Bias cooks good, but it gets monotonous after a while. Biscuits and beef and beans and beef and biscuits.
It's hard to have a variety when the kitchen keeps moving. Anyway, try batching for a while and you'll appreciate a good cook.
A high canyon wall just west of camp blocked the setting sun, so the dusk came early and stretched out a while. With darkness and the first bright stars came a light chill, though not enough to cause Huey to dig into his war bag for a denim jacket. He heard a horse squeal and hooves shuffled in the corral as one of the more dominant animals bullied a timid one. On the other side of camp, one of the Mexicans plucked out a melancholy song on a guitar. It seemed to Huey that most Mexican songs were melancholy at heart. Many cowboy songs as well told sad stories of dying on the range far from home or of long-ago loves left behind. The music carried Huey back to another time, to a summer's courtship of Spring Renfro.
Since you finished school and... do you ever see Miss Renfro anymore?
Every time I've been over to the Laudermilks, she's always there.
Has she changed any?
And got a little older, I guess.
From the vantage point of a boy in his teens, she'd been old to start with, having been in her 30s when she became his teacher.
I mean, is she still pretty?
I never thought of her that way. Old maids ain't supposed to be pretty, are they?
She's not an old maid yet. From where I sit, she's still young.
From where you sit, I guess just about everybody looks young.
Skip Harkness has a bad influence on the boy.
Tommy looked up at the stars.
Ain't it beautiful out here, Uncle Hugh? I never saw the like of these mountains.
It is a smiling country.
I can see why you never could be happy with anything but a riding job. It never was this pretty on the farm.
Your mama and daddy would argue with you about that. It's not just what you see that makes something pretty, it's finding what you want to see.
This is what I wanted to see, all right.
Huey suspected it would take a while to talk Tommy into going home, if he even could. The Circle W pleased Huey on first sight. Most new places did, then gradually lost their luster through familiarity. One point that appealed to him was that the previous owner seemed to have shared Huey's aversion to barbed wire. Except for a couple of horse traps, most of the ranch's 100 square miles were in one large pasture, fenced only around its perimeter. It reminded him of the open range days of recent memory when hide-ripping wire was scarcer than rain. As he had heard the story in town, Augie Wilson had put the ranch together in the late 1880s and early 90s for the eventual benefit of his two sons. Unfortunately, one died of dysentery, serving under Teddy Roosevelt in Cuba. Huey could relate to that, for the same ailment caused him to miss the charge up San Juan Hill. Huey never so much as shot at a Spaniard. Hindsight made him grateful for that. The Spaniards were said to have blown up the Maine, but none of them did him any personal injury. Still, there was a void in his life. He wished he could have enjoyed the excitement of charging up that hill with Teddy. What a bully show! The other Wilson son grew up to become a sticky-fingered sort who developed a bad habit of burning his brand on other people's calves, earning him a one-way trip to the Huntsville Penitentiary. With no family member to help her run the ranch or to leave it to, Wilson's widow chose to sell it and spend her declining years in the comfort of Fort Davis Town. Wilson's dislike for barbed wire equaled his love for the longhorn, so the scattering of cows retreating ahead of the horses showed the original wild Texas strain. Huey suspected old man Jenkins would not wait long to bring in Hereford or Durham sires, consigning the longhorn bulls to a packing house. As many as his cowboys could catch, anyway. In three or four generations, most of the old blood would be bred out. That was the trend in this new century. Throw away whatever was old and traditional. Grasp anything regarded as modern. Fast automobiles, fast trains, electric lights that required no matches and no blowing out. He even saw a flying machine set down on a flat stretch of ground outside of Alpine. It looked like a cross between a kite and a prickly pear burner. If God had intended a man to get that high in the air, he would have put feathers on him. Tommy seemed favorably impressed by the lack of fences because he had had to shut so many wire gates on the way here after the horses got through. Some were so tight that Skip had to join forces with him to fasten them. Huey could have done it, but he figured the boys needed the education. A seasoned cowboy knew to stay on horseback and let somebody else do most of the footwork.
Oh, it's a wonderful looking country.
That was true. Its scenery was more spectacular than Upton County's. The high gray rim rock towered over the western side of the long valley like a great stone wall built to keep the barbarians out, or perhaps to keep them in, depending upon how you chose to look at it. Some of the mountains ranged from 6,000 feet in altitude to more than 8, and the valley that made up most of the ranch was probably close to 4, easily 1,000 to 1,500 feet higher than the Calloway homestead. It was a high, lonesome country, sure enough. One good thing about the altitude in Huey's view, this region was too high for growing crops. It ought to remain safe from the plow. A man could freeze the buttons off his shirt here on winter mornings, though that towering wall probably provided shelter against the west and northwest winds. It had been Apache country, even to the time of Huey's boyhood. He wondered how Indians made it through January and February in nothing more than a breechcloth and leggings. He didn't dwell on that because he would probably move on before next winter. For now, the spring sun felt pleasantly warm. Grass was turning green at its base, poised to receive the rains that usually began here in June, except in those years when they forgot to come at all. Given decent moisture, it was a great country for cattle in the summer and fall. It was fair enough through winter if the landowner avoided overgrazing and saved back enough summer forage. Spring, usually dry, could be long and challenging, but ranchers hung on to the hope that June would bring rain. Huey could see a thunderhead building over the rim rock, probably setting the stage for an afternoon drenching. Tommy would wish he had a tarp to shed water from his bedroll. Well, next time he would know. Life was one hard-learned lesson after another. Letting the remuda set its own easy pace, Huey noticed a roadrunner trotting to one side.
Smart little bird there, Tommy. He's letting the horses scare up dinner for him.
A tiny lizard, frightened into movement by the passage of the remuda, scurried away from the noise and into the path of a far deadlier hazard. In a startling dash, the Roadrunner overtook it, spreading its tail to brake to a quick stop. It threw up its head, and the lizard disappeared down its throat.
Poor little devil didn't have a chance.
It would have had better luck if it had been too big to swallow whole. That paisano bird might have just grabbed it by the tail would have broke loose, and the rest of the lizard would have got away. They can grow a new tail, you know.
That story's too big to swallow whole, too.
It's a fact. Well, I've heard the Mexicans tell about paisanos that raised herds of lizards like me and you would raise a herd of cattle. They wouldn't eat anything but the tails, and pretty soon the tails would grow back. Them birds didn't have to waste time hunting. They just laid around getting fat and watching their herd grow new tails over and over. The way sheep grow a new clip of wool every time they shear.
Tommy suppressed a grin. He had heard his uncle spin Wendy's before. Huey took pleasure in the quizzical expression on Skip's freckled face as the young cowboy floundered between scorn and reluctant belief. It did a green kid good to guess a little, reminding him that he didn't know everything.
There ain't no bird that smart.
I never seen it for myself, of course. I'm just telling you what's been told to me.
Tommy observed Skip's confusion as long as he could before he let his grin break free.
Uncle Hugh, you're still the best liar I ever listened to. Better than an old snort Yarnell.
For the last part of the drive, Huey freed the half-broken bronc he'd been riding and saddled Biscuit, for he knew old man Jenkins would be watching the procession roll into ranch headquarters. As the cottonwood trees and the ranch buildings came into view, Skip turned to Tommy.
Tommy! I bet the corral gate is shut! I'll race you to see who opens it!
Whew. On that spavin-nag? My bronc can run rings around him.
Mr. Jenkins will teach you boys some words you never heard before. You was hired to drive horses, not to race them.
A little race never hurt nobody.
Don't come crying to me if you find yourself sitting on a street corner in Alpine with your pocket empty and your stomach talking to you.
He remembered, though he would not tell these boys, that he and Snort Yarnell had run many a horse race together and sometimes lost everything but their shirts. First, the boys should learn the way things ought to be. They would learn soon enough the way things actually were. But the ranch headquarters reminded Huey of something out of his boyhood, as if little new had been added in 30 or 40 years. Though a stream ran nearby, a windmill tower stood tall to catch the wind coming up the valley or down from the rim rock to turn the wooden eclipse fan, insurance against drought that might dry up the surface water. Whoever first settled the place must have imported Mexican artisans, for most of the buildings were of adobe. The main house stood low and flat, as did an even longer structure Huey judged to be a bunkhouse and kitchen for the hands. The main barn was of weathered wood that was a stranger to paint. The corrals were of the same brush construction as most of the camps on Jenkins's J-Bar, though the swinging gates were built of sawmill lumber. A couple of small sheds had adobe outer walls and were open in front. It seemed right and proper that as much as possible be built of materials existing in nature and close at hand. Thick adobe walls held the heat out in summer and in during the winter. Huey had been in frame houses where cold wind whistled through the boards, and he couldn't haul enough wood to keep the place warm. He slept outside in July and August, rather than lie beneath a sheet-iron roof that trapped enough heat to keep supper biscuits warm all night. Adobe suited him fine. He would enjoy this place for however long he stayed. The boys' race ended prematurely, and the two came back, their horses breathing hard. Skip looked over his shoulder.
Mr. Jenkins and Bide Saunders have already got the gate open.
Huey smiled. The boys dreaded a lecture from either boss about the evils of running their horses unnecessarily. Half the basic training for a cowboy was in learning what not to do. They put the horses through the gate and Budge pushed it shut behind them. Jenkins walked up, broad shoulders hunched like he had rheumatism. Huey could believe it, him riding all this way over the rough road in that car. Jenkins eyed Huey's mount critically, perhaps with a little suspicion.
You were riding Biscuit when I last seen you, and you're riding him now. You're sure you ain't pushing him too hard?
Hey, hardly knows he's been rode.
A couple of strangers walked over to the corral from the main house. One had the look of an old cowboy. The other bore all the earmarks of a money changer. Jenkins introduced the cowboy first, probably feeling more in common with him than with the other man.
Huey Calloway, this is Oscar Levitt. He's Mrs. Wilson's brother, here to see after her interests while we count the cattle. Mr. Petrie here, he's her lawyer. Says he don't know straight up about a cow, but he knows inside and out about transfers and deeds. He's here to keep me and Mr. Levitt honest.
Pleased to meet you, fellers.
Huey shook hands with each in turn. Levitt's hands were rough as old cowhide, but his eyes were direct and honest. Petrie's hands were slick as kidskin, and his gaze barely touched Huey's face before he turned his attention elsewhere.
Why is Jenkins bothering to introduce Levitt and Petrie to me? I'm just a working hand here. The old man's probably trying to butter me up and make me reconsider the foreman's job. I'd enjoy staying on this place a while, but I don't want the weight of being a boss to interfere with my sleep.
Mr. Levitt's got a ranch of his own in the Guadalupes. He brought some of his crew to help with rounding up and counting the cows.
Huey felt a pleasant glow at the thought of a roundup in this valley. It was the kind of work he liked best, for most of it was done a horseback. He could see Jenkins' touring car parked in the shade of a big cottonwood near the main house. Peeler lay on his back, his feet extending out from beneath the running board. It seemed he was forever having to fix something on that contraption. Pity, Huey thought, that a good horseman should waste his time messing around with an automobile. What if he was getting an extra $20 a month? There had to be something wrong with an able-bodied man who would willingly pass up a riding job. Because most of the ranch lay unfenced, the roundup was conducted in the old-fashioned style of the open range. The cowboys rode a daily circle several miles in diameter and picked up all the cattle they came across. Each drive overlapped the previous days to catch unworked stock that might have drifted into the cleaned area. If the late Augie Wilson disliked barbed wire, he had had no prejudice against building corrals at strategic intervals to facilitate working his cattle without having to push them the long miles to headquarters. The size and location of each drive was calculated to bring herds to one of these sets of corrals. A day's gather might run from 100 to 300 cows, given the animal's natural instincts to graze in clusters rather than disperse evenly over the entire range. As the riders pushed their individual gathers into a larger herd, a cloud of dust hovered over it, twisting and turning constantly, changing patterns like the drifting cumulus clouds overhead. Cows and calves, separated in the move, set up a din of anxious bawling as each mother sought reunion with her offspring, and each calf frantically searched for the proper udder to relieve its hunger. Calves that could not find their own mothers might try to steal milk from another cow, and more often than not were kicked or hooked away in a hostile manner. Maternal instincts had their limits. Congregating cattle in bunches almost always resulted in head-butting and horn-gouging contests between bulls routed from their own individual domains and thrown together into open competition for whatever females might currently be in heat. These fights could be long and savage, for longhorn bulls were aggressive, ready for war against any male they considered a challenge to their dominance. Huey observed over the years that one major problem in trying to upgrade a herd by the introduction of more productive beef blood was that Hereford and Durham bulls were a poor match for the longhorns in combat. Any longhorns allowed to remain in the herd would claim most of the females and fight the other bulls away. The longhorns didn't bluff. They went into a fight ready and willing to kill any opponent that didn't turn tail and run. Skip Harkness took particular enjoyment in watching these bawling, bellowing battles, taking sides with one or the other of the combatants.
Hey, Huey! Bet you a dollar old Spot yonder makes that black one run like a scalding cat.
You better give them bulls some room. They'd knock over a locomotive if it got in their way while they're fighting.
The most dangerous place to be was in the path of a loser when he decided to quit the battle, for usually he was in a blind panic to escape an opponent's horns. Huey had seen them knock down full-grown cows and trample calves to death in their haste. The daily procedure was for Bige Saunders and Oscar Levitt to count the cattle. Bide's representing the buyer and Levitt watching out for his sister's interests. Because both were experienced cattlemen, their counts never differed by more than one or two head. They tallied only cows and bulls. The calves got thrown in with the deal. Once they finished a day's count and reconciled differences, the cattle would be driven through a narrow chute where Huey would use a pocket knife to bob off the long hair on the ends of their tails so they would not be counted a second time if they got caught up in another gather. As the last of the day's cows trailed out of the chute, the ground grew littered with short tufts of hair, easily lifted by any breeze that swept through. The square-ended tails looked awkward, but the hair would grow out again after a while. It came as no surprise that Jenkins ordered the longhorn bull separated from the herd and driven into a holding trap. When the counting ended, he would ship them to a Fort Worth packing house and replace them with white-faced bulls. Driving them to the trap was like a foretaste of glory for Skip Harkness, because every mile was punctuated by fights as the animals struggled to establish an order of dominance. The strongest might have to combat half a dozen before he proved himself the cock of the walk. Then, bloody but triumphant, he would assume his place at the head of the line. The others would fall in behind him, more or less in the order of the ranking they won or lost in battle. People who preached disparagingly about the violence of man in comparison to the tranquility of the animal kingdom never watched cattle sort out the intricacies of their social structure. When the fighting died down and the trip became dull, Skip contrived to throw together a couple of bulls that had already demonstrated their combative natures but had not yet fought each other. More often than not, he was able to stir up a rousing fight. Halfway through the roundup, Skip precipitated one of these contests as a small herd of bulls neared the ranch headquarters and the gate to the holding trap.
Huey, you pick your bull. I'll bet you a dollar on the other one.
Better save your money.
Skip turned to Tommy.
How about you?
I ain't got a dollar to spare. Bet you a quarter, though.
Huey thought about reminding Tommy that his mother regarded gambling as the devil's snare, but there were some lessons a boy had to learn for himself.
I bet you too, Skip.
Tommy and the vaquero went into whispering consultation and chose a red bull with white spots that had whipped every challenger so far.
My money's on the line back. Help me throw the two of them together, Tommy.
Tommy, give them bulls plenty of room. They can hurt you.
Tommy heeded Huey's advice, but Skip rode in among the bulls and pushed the red one up to the lead position, where the lineback, drooling, lumbered along in ill humor, angry noises rumbling from its throat. It didn't take long for the lineback to take umbrage and ram a horn against the interloper's ribs. The red bull bellowed in anger, pawed dirt, and rushed the lineback. The two butted heads with a thud like a clap of thunder, then scrambled for footing while their horns locked together. One pushed as the other gave way, then stumbled and went off balance, giving ground while its opponent pushed. The rest of the bulls seemed to ignore the pair, except in yielding them space.
Skip, this is a fool's game. If one of them gets crippled or killed and Mr. Jenkins finds out you set up the fight...
They'd fight anyway. They didn't need me to get them started.
The fight began going against the lineback. The pleasure in Skip's face gave way to disappointment. He moved in closer, encouraging his champion.
Get in there! You can whip him!
Skip, get the hell out of the way!
The warning was too late. The lineback abruptly wheeled and broke into a dead run to escape the red bull, blind to anything in its path. And in its path was Skip Harkness. Struck before it could react, Skip's bay bronc was bowled over by the bull's strength and weight. Skip had time only for a grunt of surprise before the lowered head slammed into him, driving a horn deep into his stomach. The lineback flung the youngster aside as if he were a rag doll.
My God!
Skip, look out!
But the damage was already done. The red bull trampled Skip as it raced in close pursuit of its opponent. Skip lay on his back, trembling in shock. His shirt reddened around a large hole ripped through its front. Huey leaped from the saddle and hit the ground running, Tommy close behind.
Skip! Skip, are you all right?
It was obvious he was not. Huey brushed Tommy aside and ripped the shirt open. The hole in Skip's belly bubbled blood. Huey's stomach turned over in fleeting nausea. Tommy turned away, trying not to gag. The bay bronc rose steadily to its feet and staggered off, shaking itself like a dog coming out of water. It didn't seem injured. Huey saw no blood except Skip's. Huey, turn to Aparicio as he arrived with a group of vaqueros.
Load to the house and bring a wagon. Better still, send Mr. Jenkins' car if Peeler's around.
Aparicio looked down at Skip, confirming all his fears, and spurred off in a long lope. Huey pulled a handkerchief from his pocket. It wasn't clean, but this was no time to worry about niceties. He wadded it and shoved it partway into the wound, hoping to staunch the flow of blood. He wished he had a handful of flour from Bias's kitchen. Tears trailed down Tommy's pale cheeks.
We've got to do something!
Ain't much we can do here except try to keep him from bleeding to death.
Huey pressed down upon the handkerchief. He didn't like Skip's ashen look or the way he trembled.
Is he going to die?
Huey feared he was, but didn't want to betray that feeling to his nephew. Best to keep him hoping so long as there was any hope. There would be time enough later for grief.
Tommy, I wished you and the boys would go on and pull these bulls in the trap before they scatter. I'll stay here till Aparicio gets back.
I oughtn't have bet with him. If he dies, it's my fault.
You're not doing him any good standing here crying. There's a job to get done, and I don't want to hear any more about whose fault it is.
Reluctantly, Tommy mounted. The Mexican hands who had gathered around Skip backed away and joined Tommy after two made the sign of the cross. Huey was glad Tommy understood little about that sign. Huey gently squeezed his shoulder.
You just hang on and rattle, kid. Help will be coming. Oh, Lord, have mercy on this foolish boy.
Pity and anger clashed. The anger because Skip recklessly put himself into this predicament. It bothered Huey's conscience that such a feeling should come upon him at a moment like this. But damn it, he tried to teach the boys better, Skip and Tommy both. Part of the anger was at himself for not being a better teacher. Skip should not have been his responsibility, but somehow he was. Just by being around and being older, Huey owed him guidance that would have avoided a wreck like this. He would acknowledge that his own life had been reckless. Too many times he yielded to the urges of the moment without regard for what might follow. Too often he followed impulse rather than reason, bringing grief to himself and to others around him. He couldn't really blame this youngster all that much. To some extent, recklessness was a trait common in the cowboy trade. It took a reckless man to get on a bronc that had every intention of throwing him off and stomping him into the ground. It took a reckless man to put a loop around a pair of sharp horns that with the least turn of bad luck could end up goring him. He gripped Skip's hand and felt his eyes burn.
You're a good boy. Don't you be turning your horses back to the outfit.
Skip's hand went limp.
We'll take him to town in the car. It's a lot faster than a wagon.
Skip's features were relaxed, the pain gone. Huey covered the cowboy's face with his hat.
There's no use being in a hurry now. The kid is gone.